After that nice introduction, and she called me Gene Kavanaugh. But that's okay, I've been called worse things. Gene's a wonderful poet.
Watch your head.
Anyway, I'm very happy to be here, and thank you to Paul for the invitation. I always like to start with a poem from my wife, and I've been asked many times in interviews what my favorite poem is of the ones that I've written, and my answer is always the same, it's the one that I wrote yesterday. So this is close to being the one that I wrote yesterday. It's not exactly, but close. And this is for Karen. It's called Waiting in New Orleans. I recall with soft clarity the spring day we traveled together and briefly, that tiny voyage from Shelter Island to Sag Harbor. Side by side in our automobiles, we chatted only a few sentences through rolled down windows. We both bore the long and lingering sense of mourning. You asked where I was headed, and I said to New Orleans to see an old friend. On a dappled side street in the French Quarter, through a window populated with odd trappings of voodoo and souvenirs, I found a crudely carved angel in a long orange dress, embroidered with painted stars, which I carried home again. I hung it high above my window, letting it float over me in a room I used to sit. I hoped it might watch me through many long days when no one was watching. Now, years later, we sit side by side in our home, far from ferries and short voyages, far from accumulated sadness, in a place of rivers and mountains where angels live among tall trees and moss-coated stones. My angel has become our angel, pitched slightly forward, high above a new window which looks out to a whispering paradise. We no longer wander separate. You no longer ask where it is I am going. Now our chairs nested side by side, our dinner plates rest side by side. We sleep side by side in a bottomless contentment, free to forget that we don't believe in angels. This next one is called A Poem of Necessity. And I want to dedicate this to my friend Greg Delante, who I know many of you know, and I told him I was reading here tonight, and he said to make sure that I express his affections for everyone here. And he had many happy memories of reading here and being here, and apparently some unhappy ones as well. I think he told me one of these seats, they were actually charging him rent, that he sat there so long. In any case, so this is a poem of necessity. Today I am grieving, but not for any certain reason. It is Saturday at a country house. No one should be grieving here. But it happens that way at times. It is a thing we do to ourselves. After all, people sing in prisons. They laugh in rooms with the dying. Surely things end, but they begin as well, don't they? Perhaps I am not grieving for today, but for yesterday. I recall clearly when it was right there before me. Now I am unsure where I put it. It is not unlike the wind which comes and goes, or the leaves it takes from these trees which accumulate in layers of loss. It is not for what I can recall, but only for what I cannot. It is there in my mirror, in the face I have come to own, the face which has become a gray shroud for my youth. So much for us to know, all the more to be imagined. Surely we should not spare time to grieve. Our time passes and we must pass with it. What strange things these musings which can cause the eyes to fill, facing how much of it is bygone. Last night in this house, our cats walked the floor above our bed. Through the length of the dark, while no one was watching, they traveled the night. I'm at an age where people my age will understand when I say that all of the greatest music that was ever made was made when I was young. I think everybody eventually says that. And you tend to get into a rut and listen to the same things over and over again, perhaps because they're familiar or they remind you of something. But somebody changed that not too long ago. And unfortunately, she's gone now, but I was completely infatuated with Amy Winehouse, and her singing, and like many people, I watched, waiting to see how things were going to turn out. Of course, they didn't turn out well, but I did write a poem about her death. I could also promise you that things lighten up as I go on. I tend to read more lighthearted things as I go on. So this is on the dying of Amy Winehouse. Among us, there are those who will not make it, those who will contend with mortality, wrapping themselves around it, unable to let go. We watch them as prey through a sight, cheer them as the mob below looks up at the man on the ledge. We are unsure what to hope for. We stand by as they put the pain into their limbs and lungs. We take what we desire. They understand how want has no confines. But too soon the bed is emptied of lovers, and we are left with the despair that knows what we do to one another is still less than that which we do to ourselves. This one is a short poem, but probably appropriate in light of what's going on in the world at the moment. It's called Scriptures. Of all to be said of gods and men, Scriptures. Of all to be said of gods and men, drawing truth from the sharpened quill, are the many ways they write of love and the ease with which they kill. When Karen and I lived by a beautiful river in New Hampshire, although I lived most of my life in New York and now live in New Hampshire, a very quiet place, and I love looking out at this river, and I always start by telling people I never write erotic poetry, and so this is not an erotic poem. It's called The River Might Be a Woman. Here in the first days along our share of the Warner River, I have begun to believe that the river is perhaps a beautiful woman. Nevertheless, it seems to be a metaphor going nowhere. But the sight of her lying along this gentle slope, the feeling of her reclined in the dark beside me, it has captivated me in ways which are not so obvious and which do not lend themselves to my feeble pryings. I am content with that, and I want to be free to marvel. But I confess I also want to touch it, as a child wants to touch a candle flame or a draping of magenta velvet. And then, as a man, I want to be inside. This next poem is called The Question for Their Gods. You made them lithe, vertical with sinew, cunning and swift, given to tenderness. They fell in love with the night sky, then filled it with gods of very many names. They made lives from rocks and raindrops, walked their way through dust and through mud. They carried their things across savanna and sea, ascended, wondering, to the far sides of the mountains. Under the midday sun, from shade to shade, their purpose the horizon, their backs to the night. But why create so many, and with so little to sustain them, and like you, capable of such ruin and cruelties? This one, my wife and I lived for many years in the part of New York called the Hamptons, which I'm sure you've all heard about. And it was a curious place to be, but one night we went to see Patti Smith perform in a small club. And of course she's very legendary in New York and probably here as well. A strange thing happened. I was sitting in the front row. This is the story of what happened. So this is called Patti Smith Does the Hamptons. Patti Smith, you are not looking good. You must know that. The years have weathered you like a Cape Cod shingle. I suppose you were as angry at this life as you ever were back when you crawled in from the Jersey suburbs to hang in the bunker with Burroughs and Ginsburg and Warhol and Mapplethorpe, the original Bowery fag hag. I can only imagine the suffering endured dragging a brush through that hair. But you stayed on your feet last night, despite the teetering, sustaining yourself with a bottle of Poland spring water. If I had a chance to actually speak to you, I would have told you that I think myself a poet too. And if there had been any hope of a reply, I might have asked you why you found it necessary to spit on my new shoe. Which really happened. She actually did spit and it wound up on my foot. And I thought, well, this is the way you find poems in life. Just have a few words. It's called The Last Supper of Judas Iscariot. Judas was right to wait until after dessert, if only for the savior of mankind to finish his coffee and pie. He knew his master would not be happy about any of it. While his dimwit brothers shared a glass of port, he, whose name would be called Betrayer, said he would pass, thanks. Judas was right, but he hated long goodbyes. I'll see you in the garden later. There's a guy in town who owes me money. The Lord and Savior spoke, I've got a long day tomorrow. How about one more joke and we'll call it a night? Then he leaned onto his elbows and he asked, did you all hear the one about the guy who thinks he's seen a ghost? This one, I was very fond of Christopher Hitchens, who was very controversial, but I admired his intellect and his way with words and agreed with many things that he said. This was a short poem I wrote for him called Intelligent Design. I cannot give much credence to divine intervention, even at the risk of my defying a redemption. But I have faith that it would be wholly mistakable to endorse any god who'd make a bone that was breakable. I don't know if you don't have Starbucks here, do you?
Some,
of course.
University College Cooperative.
This was, I just have a couple more, but this is about Starbucks. The people who started Starbucks, there was a period of many years where Americans were stopping drinking coffee in favor of tea. At that time, a cup of coffee, say in New York, was about half a dollar. So somebody in Seattle got a great idea. They said, if we start charging people $4 for a cup of coffee, they'll start drinking it again. And it worked. And not only worked in America, it worked all over the world. And I think it's changed more things for the worse than for the better. One of the things, my wife and I were in Paris several years ago, and they were saying that Starbucks was coming to Paris, and I realized it was going to destroy the cafe culture in Paris, because to have coffee in Paris, you had to sit down in a cafe and have the waiter bring you a cup of coffee, and you had to finish it there. But now that you could go to a place and get a cup of coffee and carry it away with you, the whole society is changed by that one simple thing. But anyway, people my age were traumatized frequently by the first time they went to Starbucks. This is called A Small Request. I told the girl in the green smock that I wanted a small cup of coffee. She might not have understood me. Instead, she pointed my attention to a high place on the wall behind her, which suggested that a complex choice was before me, one which might be best made after a cup of coffee. I turned back to face her again, the girl in the green smock. She asked what I would like, but I did not see it on her wall. She asked what I might want that I did not see written up on our wall. I said, a small cup of coffee. But she just made the same response. So I told her I would have a Pepsi instead. She said, Coke. She only had Coke. Then she asked, what size? I came to things like smartphones later than most people, but my kids were doing this very early on and got to be very good. And of course, I had to learn things like what OMG meant, oh my God, you know, all these little tricks they use. I actually sat one time with my son and daughter while they had a conversation across the room with one another texting, and I thought that was rather strange. So this poem is called, It's Like OMG. My children use their thumbs to converse with invisible people. They speak a language with no words, a shorthand of the hands. Sometimes I try using my voice to interrupt them, yet they continue wandering in a place with no sound, where thoughts become reflexes, and God exists as a single letter. I just have one more from you, or for you, not from you. The thing that connected me to my Irishness as much as anything was a fellow that I knew from Dublin who introduced me to the Pogues. And this was in 1984, so this was very early on before they were well known. But I grew really to love the Pogues and greatly admire Shane McGowan. I got to see them 3 times. And have to report that one of the times my wife and I went to see them in New York, we had just walked in the door, and she said, "I'm going to the ladies' room," and she came back, she said, "I'm leaving." And I said, "Why are you leaving?" She said, "Somebody just threw up on me." So this is what happens at Pogues concerts in America. But nonetheless, I admired Shane McGowan, and I wrote this little poem for him called "To the Bug Who Perished in My Drink." To the bug who just perished in my drink, you have caused me to take a pause for a think. I might have advised that before you begin it, better you should die of the drink rather than in it. Though liquor can be our mortal diversion, it's surely quicker and simpler to die by immersion. While I now consider you my sad little ghost, how's about one more round for a toast? Thanks for your attention.